Hello, Dan Morin.
Hello, Jason Snell.
How
if
are,
that is your real name.
It's not. It's an alias I created a long time ago as my pen name.
Smart.
My
that's
actual
a good idea.
Name.
That's a life hack right there.
And there may be other names you do not know
yet. Names of such power.
They do. I was in the desert on a horse with
Is that a metaphor or?
No, I was really in the desert. I was in Arizona for 3 days and it was dry and hot.
That'll do it.
It's not a
wet heat.
It's not PR. I was going to say, it's not like the desert, when you go out into the desert, it's not really dry or hot like they say. No, it is. It is really, it was like 100 degrees and it's October, but yeah. Anyway, I'm back now. I actually wrote about this on Macworld this week. I took my laptop with me for podcasting reasons, basically. Like, it was, I can do podcasting with just an iPad and my iPhone, but it gets really complicated and has some serious potential, like, failure modes. You know, like, using the computer makes it a lot easier and safer.
Right.
Because I get backup recordings and things that I don't get. And so I brought it with me. And the piece I wrote on Macworld was basically like, it was weird having both because I generally am not traveling with my laptop anymore. And it did make me recognize a few things about what I like about laptops that I hadn't really thought about in a while. But it also made me feel like I'm in this really weird place where my iPad is not optional when I'm traveling. I'm always going to bring it. And then the laptop is optional. It's like, do I need to bring the laptop? And I mostly don't, but I did this time with it's 11 inch. So it's like not Retina and 11 inch screen. And then my iPad with the almost 13 inch screen. It was quite a contrast.
Yeah, I had not gotten a chance to read the whole article yet, but I saw the headline and thought to myself, I think I'm still the other way around.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, most people maybe are. But I did realize, though, that like not taking my iPad with me is not going to happen. Like, so for me, it's not like either or. It is very much like I take the iPad and either I take like an external keyboard or I take a laptop. But I'm not taking the iPad,
you know,
right?
It's funny because even in the house, oftentimes in the house, I'll just use the iPad if I'm sitting around the couch or whatever. The other night I was watching the presidential debate and I thought, oh, I'll just bring my iPad over the couch and I'll, you know, surf Twitter and post stuff and maybe look at Slack or what have you while I'm sort of got the debate on. And that lasted like maybe 2 minutes before I decided I was too frustrated with having to, with just like the windowing essentially,
oh,
or the lack thereof. And so I was like, oh, you know what? I really just want to like have a bunch of windows I can have open in different places. And you know, I brought my MacBook.
There was such a device.
I know. And I brought my MacBook Air over and I was like, this is perfect. This is exactly what I need. And it's, you know, there's things I like the iPad for a lot better, but in some ways my brain just feels still very wired to the interface on a Mac.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I flipped that switch. I've turned that corner where like watching a baseball game or a presidential debate or something like that, and where when I'm just doing like Slack and Twitter and stuff like that, it's like I would much rather sit on the couch with an iPad than have a laptop. And I found myself I was doing work on the iPad or on the laptop, and then I started like reading an article, and I thought to my like on the web or looking at Slack, and I thought, I'm going to close the computer. I don't want to do this here. Like, I don't enjoy this here as much as I do on the iPad. It just feels really different. It's not like I don't use the Mac. I use the Mac right now I'm using it. I have this iMac and I sit at my desk all day using the Mac. I'm not a switcher from the Mac to the iPad, but I don't like in the rest of our house, I don't open up the laptop. That never happens. And so it was interesting to reintroduce it in the mix. I guess that's the reason I wrote the article, is really it was funny to have it back in the mix and have me get to make some observations having had it out of the mix for a while, to be like, oh, this is what it's like to have a laptop while you're traveling and not just an iPad. And, you know, again, there are some nice things about it. And I thought to myself, oh, does this mean that at some point I'm going to want to buy a new MacBook? like a MacBook or a MacBook Air if they do update that. And I thought to myself, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't use it often enough. And it's still, even though it's 3 years old, it's still a pretty powerful, this MacBook Air that I've got. And that led me down the path of, like, am I ever going to buy a Mac laptop again? I don't know if I am. I don't know, well, because in a few years, if, assuming the iPad progresses, in a few years when I really might feel like I need a new laptop, like in the olden times, the iPad may have gone forward so far that it's irrelevant. I don't know. It was just a weird moment of like, wait a second, really? Like, maybe never buy a Mac laptop again? But it's like, for me, maybe not. That's weird.
Yeah. And again, I mean, you know, it's nice that we have all these different models with different use cases. Yeah. I find myself, you know, I've traveled with only my iPad and I find it fine for a limited time, but you know, I'm going away for several weeks later, you know, in a month or so. And I don't think I can, not only because there are some things that I can't do, although on your recommendation. So I bought a new, a little travel mic
good.
It's still not tiny. But it's much smaller than my Yeti.
All right, what'd you get?
I end up getting the Audio Technica that you recommended.
Oh yeah, good.
USB XLR,
the AT USB.
Yeah, it is pretty nice. I only run some quick tests on it, but it seems to tick a lot of the boxes I was looking for. Mainly compact USB, and it's got a monitor port, all that good stuff.
Yeah,
and I did just on a whim test it, connecting it to my iPad with a USB lighting adapter. And works fine.
Yeah.
So, you know, in theory, I could record something. Granted, we all know the limitations of iOS is that I can't then be on a Skype call and record at the same time.
Yeah,
they'll fix that, you know.
One day they'll fix that, although the methodology that I have used in the past is that I record on my iPhone I record on my iPad while I'm talking to people using like earbuds on my iPhone on Skype. Sure. And so, you know, my voice sounds great on the recording. They hear a less great sounding voice on the Skype call, but it doesn't matter because I'm also recording it. That's kind of dumb, but it does work.
It's a hack, but I mean, you know, I assume someday if the iPad is going to get more and more powerful, someday it will be capable of that.
But you're going to India, though, and it goes back to, I mean, one of the reasons I brought this on the laptop on the trip is its flexibility. Like on your Mac, I feel like when you pack for a trip with an iPad, you've got to like be sure that every single thing that you're going to do can be accomplished with the iPad. Right. And if you bring a Mac with you, you can be, I think, basically confident that whatever gets thrown at you, you will be able to do it on the Mac.
Right.
And that's just the facts right now is the Mac, you can almost anything you can do that you might need to do. And on the iPad, you may get in a moment, and if you're traveling a long way, it's really tough, where you realize, oh no, I can't do this part. Yeah.
And I found crazy workarounds, like, you know, using stuff like screens, you know, for screen sharing. You can go back to your Mac and you can access things. You've written in the past about finding like files in the in like your crash plan backup, right? Like there's workarounds, but a lot of times there are things that you can't always count on, and that's kind of tough.
The one that I kept thinking of is it's a podcasting example, but I think it's applicable to other things. In this case, sometimes I do podcast recordings and I've got my little handy digital recorder, right? There's one, but you know, you can't. An iPad can't read the file off the card. It can see pictures and videos, but it can't see
arbitrary file browser
and open them in. I wrote an article about it, I think, on Macworld, where I complain about this. I hope that they add that at some point because it's really dumb. But it's just one of those things where any laptop will do. You can literally just, if there's a friend with a laptop, you can work around this problem. But if you don't, then you've just hit a roadblock. You're like, oh, I am unable to proceed now, and I would hate to go on a long trip with that hanging over my head. Of like, well, what if?
Absolutely.
What if? Just you gotta bring it back with you.
You know, they're edge cases and not like edge cases in the sense of like, oh yeah, one person once will want to do this one thing, but edge cases in the sense of like, the iPad probably accommodates 80-90% of what you want to do, but there are 10% of things that you do infrequently that you may still want to do.
And I think I used that number. I think I said some sort of like, the iPad can now do 90% of what I need. But there's the other 10%, and that's a collection of either really weird workarounds or it can't do it. And so if I'm going somewhere and I know I don't need that 10%, it's fine. But if I might need that 10%, it's not so good. And this comes back to, you know, my iPad Pro 9.7. I mean, that's like a $1,000 computer. That's a laptop like premium laptop price kind of computer that I have, and it has things that it like reading a memory card that it just can't do, and that's on Apple. Like that's on Apple to do. Hopefully, there were rumblings that maybe in the spring an iOS 10 update that would have more of the productivity features like we saw with iOS 9 last year. But that's on them. Like the hardware is great, and the software still has all of these places where it needs to be way better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like we talked about multitasking in the past, or I'm sure we have, but like the multitasking interface is, you know, it's great that they finally sort of added that, but it doesn't work very well. Like, you know, it's fine once you get it set up, but like trying to find your app in that second little pane when you're scrolling like around, it's just annoying. It's just really irritating and it feels super kludgy. And you know, it's clearly something that I feel like they took sort of a quick and dirty approach to it. And they're like, this works and it's good enough for now. And, you know, maybe we're working on something that's a little more, you know, in depth in terms of how it integrates with the operating system. But for now, this will like satisfy a lot of people. And it's good. It's certainly a lot better than not having it. But, you know, you put that up against a Mac with multi-windowing, multitasking, and it falls woefully short for me. And, you know, that some of it is you rewire your brain and you're doing different things and don't require those sort of things. But, you know, for a long time, it wasn't possible to, say, write in a document while looking at a web page. That's kind of a deal breaker for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they've moved in that direction, but clearly there's more work to be done
there.
And I will say on the laptop front, I had been debating whether or not my 11-inch Air was going to be sufficient for my travel needs. And I tested editing a podcast on it earlier in the week and recalled that, yes, it has a lot smaller screen, and it's you'd think being a MacBook Air, it's less powerful than my iMac. But I remembered that my iMac is 3 years old and the Air is only 2 years old. And so it's perfectly fine. It heats up and the fan goes and all that, but it's got like an i7 in it, so it's not like lagging by any means.
Yeah, my Air is a 2013 i7, and so it's 11-inch, and it's perfectly fast. Although I'm reminded now that the going on this trip and doing some podcast editing, I was like, oh yeah, 5K iMac. It's faster.
It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
It's a lot faster.
And it's got a lot more screen space, too.
And,
but hey, trade-offs.
Oh, my goodness. But trade-offs, exactly right. And it's still perfectly, like, perfectly capable. The SSD on those MacBook Airs and the processors and all that, they're incredibly powerful. Like, they just are. So, you know, you might not be able to unlock them with your Apple Watch, right? But you can do a lot of things with them.
Well, anyway. And you know, my iMac is a 2011 and I installed Sierra on it finally 2 days ago, because I had been running the beta on my Air and I found, okay, it seems like, you know, it's been out in the wild for a little while. It seems like everything's stable enough. So I updated to Sierra on it, and it did remind me that a lot of the features in there are like, yeah, I can't do that. Like, there's old wireless chips and stuff in here, and the display is not Retina, and so it's like doesn't seem as impressive.
Yeah.
Alas.
Oh well. Well, yeah, I think bringing a laptop with you is a must. So do that. That'll be good.
It's interesting that you mentioned the sort of the 90% of the iPad there, because that brought to mind another thing that I read earlier this week, which I just wrote an article about for Macworld, which will probably go up tomorrow, is Walt Mossberg's critique of Siri.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was very interesting. And I think the reason that resonated for me when you said that 90% number is he mentions there that he talked to Apple and they said they really focus on, you know, the things people do commonly, like sending messages or, you know, other things like that with Siri, rather than sort of what they call these long tail questions like, when are the presidential debates? And to me, I totally understand the idea of prioritizing certain features, but that seems like a total BS answer to me, if only because, one, you end up with sort of a cross between a self-fulfilling prophecy and a chicken and an egg problem. Is nobody using that because it's not very good at it?
It's a self-fulfilling egg.
Yeah, it's a self-fulfilling egg. It's a bad yolk. It's, you know, it's... Wah, wah. Wah, wah, thank you. Or is it, you know, is it one of the, no one's going to use it because nobody trusts it?
Which is sort of what Walt said. Is that maybe people just give up on these things, and that's why they don't get used very often. And I know that's true. Like, I've given up on asking Siri all sorts of things because I've never been. And honestly, also, if they're focusing on things like messages, my experience, like, sending and receiving messages with Siri is not good.
And it reminds me, too, of the, and I don't think he brought this up, but Apple Maps, right? Like, same sort of thing. I think Apple Maps had the virtue of succeeding eventually because A, it has, you know, just being totally built in, and B, it's a thing that people are very comfortable with, right? Mapping as an idea and online mapping has been around for a long time, and Apple Maps did eventually get good enough, but trying to get people to adopt a brand new feature that is not, you know, easily patterned on something that they've done before is a lot harder when it doesn't work very well. And I think Apple Maps did suffer to a certain degree. I imagine they've probably come back a lot. But, you know, those early couple versions, it was not pretty because there was stuff that was really bad and like misdirecting people. And if it only takes about once for that to happen before you decide you're not going to use it again. And so I think, you know, Apple's trying to play cool. Between this Mossberg piece, and I was thinking back to the Stephen Levy piece from a couple months ago talking about machine learning.
Right.
They're trying to put out a bit of a PR game, I feel like, with this, but I don't feel like it's done very well. And I don't know if it's just because they're prioritizing the wrong things or their technology really is sort of falling behind, but it's, you know, it's not, for a product that's 5 years old, it does feel pretty stagnant.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like they didn't add. I mean, they added in all of the new Siri app connection stuff in iOS 10, and they added it to the Mac. But you're right, it doesn't feel like I'm not getting a lot of.
I don't use any of those. I barely use it on the Mac. I don't use any of the. I don't use the ride sharing stuff very often.
Right.
And a lot of the other things that are third party scenarios on there are, frankly, not that popular. Like third party photo searching, like. Maybe there's people who use that, but I don't think that's like a top tier feature.
I'm not disagreeing. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is there's movement, and yet it doesn't seem to have really solved the larger problem that it doesn't feel reliable. It doesn't seem to understand context. There's all of these issues that are happening in the background here with Siri that. Sometimes I think what Apple's PR effort in this regard is really trying to do is just say, yes, we're still here. Without having anything to kind of to show for it. And I wonder sometimes if maybe milestones are a problem with Siri. This is one of those things to talk about cultural things, differences between Apple and Google, is that Google is a web services company and they iterate constantly online. And Apple is a product release company and they release products and they have a release date. And Siri is weird because Siri does not exist inside a product. It is a web service, which means they should be constantly updating it and improving it.
Which they claim they are, but it's not very visible.
I know, and that's exactly it. Is I wonder if culturally, because they're never pushed like the rest of Apple to ship a product. I mean, I'm sure they've got deadlines and things internally, but it's not the same as shipping an iPhone every fall. And I wonder if that is one of the problems culturally at Apple with something like this is it's a different kind of feel because it's not like I mean they apparently fixed the debate thing. Enough people complained about its inability
that's not a solution. No, the solution is not every funny? Time somebody complains about something fix it because at that point it's too late.
And that's my point is, you know, so now they're patching like queries one at a time. Also,
that's a terrible idea.
Also, I got to say, you talk about product decisions. Siri being a joker.
Yeah,
is tired because I am happy to have delight when I use a tech product, but it needs to work. And when Siri does all of these cutesy things that Siri says, or the, oh, can't you believe that if you ask Siri this thing, it says this, that is a lot less. I'm a lot less charitable to that when I feel like the product doesn't work very well.
Well, yeah, especially because it feels like an if this then that like type workflow, right? This is like the joke program I wrote in BASIC when I was 10, you know?
That's right.
And I think this is hard. And I feel like, you know, like you said, I think that's a good point that it's not really a product. And in some ways, I feel like they should treat it more like one. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. At this point, part of me wonders if essentially at some point what they have to do is scrap it and even like, you know, basically we've got a new virtual assistant with a new name. I feel like the brand may be tainted at that point.
Know.
Like
I don't know. I think a lot of people, I mean, people still know it and I think they've got
sure.
I think they got a lot of latitude with the brand. I do think technically it wouldn't surprise me if they are going to scrap it and replace it with a new version at some point, perhaps even in the background. And that one of the reasons it may seem, you know, sometimes products seem their most stagnant because behind the scenes there's a new version coming.
Right. Yes. And, that's the best answer I have.
but you know, when we talk about the Amazon Echo and we talk about you know, the fact that it doesn't have a screen, and Google Home similarly doesn't have a screen, and that so much of Siri seems to kick you to other sources, but they only just kick you to like web data of the source rather than doing a text interaction with it. You know, this is all part of that too, which is how do they build this thing so that it can understand your context, give you information, not punt and give you a web page. And like Walt had some good examples about the context stuff. Like now it knows when the presidential debate is, but if the next thing you say is add it to my calendar, it doesn't know what to do. And that's just really bad. And it needs to get better. Can I share with you? You want to talk about delight. I had legitimately the most delightful experience with Alexa, with the Amazon Echo that I have ever had today.
Please. I think I've heard you mention this, but share with our listeners.
What I said to, because I read a tweet from somebody that they had, Amazon had added this feature, which is you can play a song based on the lyrics. So I said, because I was trying to think, what's a song that people know, but they probably don't necessarily know the title of the song.
The title, right.
And so what I said was, hey, lady, ahoy, canister, play the song that goes, maybe we can drive around this town and let the cops chase us around. To which Alexa immediately said, playing Hey Jealousy by the Gin Blossoms, and began playing the song. And I just started laughing because it's like, that's magic. That is amazing. The fact that you can know a line from a song and say, hey, lady, play the song that goes like this. And it got it. I tried a few other things too. It got all of them. And
yeah,
like,
I tried a couple of those today too.
It's one application. It might not always work, but it brings delight. It actually solves a real problem, which is people don't know the titles of the songs, but they know some words that are in them. Mm-hmm. It uses their music infrastructure, all of those things. And I thought, I haven't had a feeling like that with Siri for a very long time, but I had that moment with the Echo today.
Well, and I wrote a post also about the Echo today, which is that they rolled out this Echo spatial perception thing that they were talking about back when they introduced the second generation Echo Dot a couple months ago. ESP, it reads your mind. It kind of does. It's actually pretty cool, which is that it basically, if you have multiple Echoes in your house, it listens with all of them and then responds on the one that you basically, it thinks you are closest to. And
that's so good.
It works pretty well. Like, I could stand in my living room and I can see both of them from there. And I could ask a question, and I would see them both light up, but only one would respond. And depending on, like, I could move a little bit towards the kitchen, and the kitchen one would generally respond. I could move a little bit towards my office one would generally respond. And so they're clearly both listening, but it can use information from the microphones to essentially figure out, okay, where are you? And the fact, because when I first got the second Echo, I ended up having to change the wake word on it. Right. In fact, I just, you know, this is hilarious. I just found myself giving a side glance to it because often it lights up when I say its name. And I realized Echo isn't the wake word anymore. So I can say Echo as much as I want now. Sorry, listeners. So now I, like, the problem was I could say that word and it would, they would both try to respond and it would just get super confusing. It seems pretty obvious. And it's something, honestly, that I feel like Apple needs probably, is this sort of presence idea, right? We've talked before about stuff where, like, notifications popping up on a bunch of different devices. And obviously, some of these are harder problems to solve. But I think that's just a brilliant move on Amazon's part. And they really, to our point earlier about Siri not feeling like a product, you know, every Friday I get an email telling me all the stuff that it, like, the added to the Echo this week. And, it's not always the most interesting, but a lot of times it's interesting enough for me to try out a couple of the things that they mention.
Sure.
And that's, you know, it feels like a living product, right? It feels like stuff gets done to it and added to it and improved on it pretty regularly. And it's not perfect. And it certainly has problems with context. But, you know, Amazon's been successful with this device in a way that Apple and Siri, it's been a lot tougher. And so I'm, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. We have all these intelligent agents right now. I'm really intrigued to see just how well the Google Home does. I would have ordered one, except for the fact that I'm leaving the country and decided that would not be super useful. But I may check out one when I get back. And of course, Apple's rumored to be working on something similar too. And there's a lot of work to be done in this area. I think we've talked before, I think, about how the fact that, like, you know, your intelligent agent, it's probably about the intelligence of your dog, right? Like, it knows its name. It sort of perks up when it's mm-hmm. hear its name, and you can tell it to do very simple commands, but it can't really interpolate or make new decisions based on that. And the most simple thing, and this is in my Macworld column that's coming out tomorrow, so sneak peek for you listeners. The biggest thing that is a problem is none of these agents really understand the very simple idea of and. So I can tell Jason, turn off the lights and turn off the television, and you will easily be able to parse that and know to do both those things. You can't do that with these agents. They don't understand that that's two separate commands. I can tell, you know, my girlfriend, oh, you know, when I'm talking, we're like, oh, can you add this and this and this to the shopping list? And she can easily do that. And if you try to do that with Siri, it just shoves them all in one item, which is not very useful. So, you know, these are relatively simple linguistic concepts for people to manage, but they are a lot harder for machines to figure out. And that's, I think, going to be a really big thing in terms of getting people to adapt to these intelligent agents and use them more fluidly, is having them be more person-like. And, you know, that's, I'm sure it will happen, but it is certainly a lot harder than just, you know, adding the presidential debate to its knowledge base.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the challenge for Apple. Also, you know, just from a personnel standpoint, part of Apple's challenge is that they got to hire people who are good at this stuff, and they're this is hard stuff, and I'm not quite sure. I mean, that's a challenge, well, because
those people are getting snapped up too. Samsung just bought Viv, which was composed of a bunch of former Siri people.
Yeah. And that's an interesting story from a point of, if they're, you know, Samsung is kind of hedging against Google.
Absolutely.
And making its own way. And then Amazon and Google, obviously, and Microsoft. And I mean, it's a hot area. And is Apple attracting the best talent for Siri? I don't know. I mean, if you want to work on hot virtual assistant technology, is Apple the place you want to be? I'm not even saying anything about Siri, but it's like, do you feel central to the mission of Apple by working on Siri versus by working at Google or by working at, you know, maybe not at Amazon, because central shipping products in boxes is probably central to the mission of Amazon. But I don't know. It's a challenge for Apple. We'll put it that way. And
it's outside their comfort zone.
And they had a big head start, right? I mean, they really did. They went out early. And this, I guess, this is almost Newton-like. I hate to say that, but it's like they went out early. And now the downside of going out early is that your stuff is the oldest. And everybody else got to use you as the benchmark and build new technology. And I wonder what they're doing and how that's going to go. Because it does, I don't use Siri very much. And when I do use it, you know, I use it on the Apple Watch a lot, because there the input is more complex. And on the second generation Apple Watch, it's even faster at like opening apps and setting timers and stuff like that. But, you know, as sort of a deep knowledge assistant kind of thing, instead of a vocal shortcut, I don't use it at all. Yep. And I wish that it was better in the car too. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. It does try.
It works. I do okay with it in my car with the Bluetooth setup. The biggest problem it took me to get used to is, now they updated it fairly, I don't remember if it was iOS 9 or 10, but like it essentially was much more fluid at responding to stuff, and it wouldn't always give you a cue when it was listening. It would do like, or do the vibration rather than a sound. So if you've like You know, you sort of had to be like, ahoy, telephone, do this, as opposed to ahoy, telephone, wait, and then say do this. Otherwise, right. It would get confused. But in the car, it still gives me a prompt. So if I say ahoy, telephone, and it's in my little dashboard mount, I have to wait till I hear the bloop, bloop through the Bluetooth speaker before I can say anything. And there's a lag time of a second or two. So I can get it to cue up a song or give me directions or whatever, but I have to be a little more patient with it. I don't know if that's an iOS / Apple shortcoming or my car's Bluetooth system or a combination of both. But it is, yeah, it definitely, that's a place where Siri is extraordinarily useful, or at least the idea of Siri is extraordinarily useful, and it could stand to be a little more practically useful.
Yep. Well, now I'm depressed. I'm going to go have Alexa play some more songs for me.
Is there anything more exciting than we, or like more upbeat that we could talk about? I don't know. It seems like a quiet week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm hearing, I'll do some follow-up from a previous show. We'll end on that. Maybe that'll be a good way to do it.
Criminology.
Which is, yeah. Well, I'm hearing my sources. It's not true.
Sources tell this.
My sources are reporting. Yeah, no, I think what I've heard is that that last week of October is going to be an event, and that it might actually be at Town Hall. Brides again. I can get out that story about Town Hall that Stephen Hackett and I put together, and we can just run it again. yeah, good times. Good times. I can put that slide. Tim can put the slide up again, saying, "Hey, this time for sure, no more Town Halls. See ya." See you later, everybody. So I think that we are going to get new Mac announcements at the very least by the end of the month. Shipping hopefully immediately or shortly thereafter, because that's usually what they do with Mac announcements. Although it wouldn't surprise me if some of the newer stuff they've got, it's sort of like later. They usually do that where it's like, this is shipping now, this is shipping now, this is shipping later this year. And then it ships on like December 30th or something.
Because you got to get in right under the wire.
Sometimes that happens. But it looks like I'm hearing more people say that it's going to happen. And I, you know, I've heard the same, that there's an event at the end of the month. And some people are talking about the 27th, which is a Thursday, which is a little bit weird. But they did move the financial results back to the 26th, so it's possible that they did that so that they could get, you know, get this product 25th, announcement out.
Actually,
25th, the 25th,
it was
right?
A Tuesday. So well, it was weird because we talked about it and it was on. We're like, oh, it's weird, it's on Thursday, and yeah. Then they moved it to Tuesday, and everyone's
now
like,
it's Tuesday. So
well,
maybe,
that's weird too.
Maybe the event's Wednesday. Maybe the event's Thursday. I don't know. It is a little bit strange, but I'm hearing that it's happening, and we should know next week, because that's they
About
usually
a week
don't
to 10
go
days.
More they yeah. usually yeah it's 7 to 10 days that they send out the announcements. So I'm looking forward to that, though. I hope that all works out,
fingers crossed.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks everybody out there for listening to the Secret Podcast, which I waited until I was home and left the desert behind me and my horse that has no name. But thanks.
You should give your horse a name. You should stop riding horses with no names. It's just
no. I prefer them that way. That way they don't. Okay.
It's called horse.
Yeah.
You.
They don't know. They'll answer to anything.
Ahoy, horse.
They're not. Yeah, they're not as smart as the dog and the lady in the canister. They know their names. The horse doesn't even know that it doesn't have a name.
That's deep.
Wow. And we'll leave you on that. Thank you, subscribers. We appreciate it. We'll see you next time. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.
Bye, horse.
Horse.
Nay.